Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was director of inpatient services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and in the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having any problems breaking through that next level in athletics, give her a call. If you have any problems with life, please see a professional. Whether you give Dr. Carroll a call or anyone else, please see a professional. Don't take it out on your neighbors, your friends, or even worse, police or firemen. Well, guys, I'm glad to have everybody back. It's been a bright, sunny week down here, and I'm unsure that it's been a little sunny up there.
Good to be back, Butch. And I just want to take a second just to thank you, Butch, Frankie, Casey, Brady, the whole gang, for coming and supporting our family during that time. I just want to take this second just to thank the Carrolls and the whole Fighting Word family for their support.
Well, we are family, and we always will be family. So there was no, I couldn't keep them back from coming. Okay. Mel was such a wonderful guy and had such a lasting memory on the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, they would come back not only about stuff that we did together on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but certain things that you know, the talks that he had with the boys, and you know, it's just it was our pleasure to be there.
It was really good to meet you guys. You guys look great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. For whole people.
Yeah, we're all down there, right?
Z, you took the you took first prize. Everybody was waiting to hear what you had to say, and you said it succinctly. And you said it from the heart, which really meant everything to everybody there.
Thank you very much, sir.
So we got. I'm having a little problem trying to understand what happened with the Jose Ramirez and Danny O'Connor fight. I understand O'Connor put on some weight and couldn't take it off, and so the WBA has canceled the fight. Did you guys know anything about that?
Well, O'Connor was within 2 pounds of making weight.
Right.
And he just suffered from severe dehydration. His body basically shut down. He had to be hospitalized. So, and thus the fight was canceled. So, I mean, the main event now is Juan Carlos Abreu against, I can't pronounce the welterweight's name. He's Eastern European guy, I think from Lithuania, 19-0 with 60 knockouts. We've seen him fight a few times. I just can't really pronounce his name. But, yeah, so O'Connor just suffered from severe dehydration. But that's been an ongoing trend, not just in boxing, but in MMA and combat sports in general, because you see, you know, we don't have the same day weigh-ins like we had in years prior. So, you know, guys have a full 24 hours, actually sometimes even more, to rehydrate. Mm-hmm. And so they try to come in as low as possible so they could take advantage of the size they have. However,
sure.
Them trying to shed 5, 10 pounds
mm-hmm.
in an hour to make weight, then trying to shed 50 pounds in a week to make weight, and then rehydrating back 20 pounds for the fight, that's just not healthy. And what you're starting to see is it's starting to take its toll on guys. O'Connor is just the latest victim. He didn't do anything out of the ordinary. He got to down within 2 pounds, and he just couldn't – his body wouldn't move anymore. And he eventually got really ill. It's a problem that we have, you know, ongoing now in combat sports.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I'm take the old school approach with that thing. I really believe in same day weigh-ins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just guys need to fight more toward their weight. Well, I mean, if you're going to train down to a weight, that's one thing. But if you're going to train down to that weight, then that's the weight you're training to should be your fight weight. I mean, you shouldn't I can understand maybe rehydrating slightly, you know, just, you know, because some guys do get heavy. Now, if you're getting heavier, too heavy to make one division, I mean, it gets a little critical, but then, especially in boxing, the divisions are broken down to a point to kind of where you don't have to be a welterweight and have to move all the way to middleweight. You don't have to be a middleweight and move all the way to heavyweight or light heavyweight to fight. I mean, there are, you know, right now, you know, you have the in-between divisions. So,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of tough, you know, on guys who, to be honest, are fighting because you still have guys out there fighting more or less their normal weight, closer to their
mm-hmm.
normal walk-around weight.
Right.
And as I say, and just Ty hit it on the head, it's one thing, I mean, when a guy trains down to that weight, but now you're training down and then right, you know, within a day, you're bouncing right back up. You're killing yourself to get down to this weight, and then within a day, you're bouncing
mm-hmm.
up nearly 20 pounds. That,
right.
I mean, you can't, I mean, the body, it, and what I'm seeing also is guys aren't, you know what I'm saying, it affects their ring effectiveness, their stamina, I mean, to be honest. So sometimes, I mean, guys aren't as durable just because, you know, that, you know, your body gets sick off of stuff like that. I mean,
sure.
in that sense, you know, but like, ill, it won't react the way the body should. And then you're putting it under athletic duress and physical abuse. You want to be as durable as you can. And I understand guys saying, well, I put the weight on, I'm durable. Okay, well, how are you putting that weight on? Is that weight really as effective?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's one of the gripes that Dr. Chris has always had. The guys trying to change their weight to get down to the level and then turn around and they lose more of an ability to, because they don't have that muscle to hold it. And that always becomes a major problem for them.
You know, I think one of the points that Zito made that I think kind of goes unmentioned quite often when we're looking at combat sports. MMA, their weight classes, you know, it's still relatively a new sport, so their weight classes are more, you know, spread apart. In boxing, we have those intermediary classes. You know what I mean? We have super middleweight between middleweight and light heavyweight. We have cruiserweight between light heavyweight and heavyweight. So there are ample classes for guys to kind of fight comfortably towards their own weight. What it is everybody wants a competitive advantage. They want to take as much of an advantage as they can within the rules of the sport, and that's what people are doing. However, what it is doing also is leaving their bodies completely depleted and severely, you know, damaged through this, specifically as they age. Danny O'Connor is like 33 years old. You know what I mean? He's getting up there. So, you know, as you get older, you know, that taking that weight off and putting it back on is just not healthy for you. So, and as you get older, so you're a little less apt to do it because your metabolism slows down. So you take a guy who's been fighting at 147 or 140 since he's been 20 years old, and now he's 30. Like Terrence Crawford, everybody was like, oh, can Terrence Crawford be effective at welterweight? For us, it was just a matter of, can he be effective at handling the physicality of other welterweights? Not can he be effective at that weight, because Terrence Crawford effectively was coming into the ring for a fight where he weighed in at 140, coming into the ring at 160. So all these guys are hydrating between 16 and 22, 23 pounds overnight to have a competitive advantage. So you're watching a junior middleweight fight, you're effectively watching two middleweights fight. You're watching a junior welterweight fight, I should say, and you're effectively watching two middleweights fight.
Sure.
So, but what's happening, like you and Zito said, specifically you just mentioned this, which what's happening is you're taking guys who aren't big guys, and they're getting in shape through training, and then they're losing muscle to get down to weight. That's not healthy. And that also takes away, like you and Zito were saying, from the stamina and durability.
Mm-hmm. You know, another one that absolutely blows my mind is Andre Berto taking on Devin Alexander August 4th. That just seems to me to be Berto's last ditch. What do you think?
It's a money making fight. I mean, for Berto, I mean, for both of them. I mean that's a fight that, I mean, Berto wouldn't turn down. That said, I mean, as far as financially, yeah, you go ahead and take it. Alexander just has a victory off of Victor Ortiz, so yeah, you go ahead and take that. As far as in the ring wise, I've seen Alexander's, I mean, to be honest, Alexander's lately looked better than Berto to me. I would expect Alexander to win, but I would not be surprised if Berto won.
Mm-hmm. Ty?
You know, I like the matchup. I like the matchup just for the fact that it's two guys who are outside of immediate contention for titles, but they both still have name value. And they're at similar points in their career. They had some success. They've had their ups and downs. And they're at about the same stage, not necessarily in their career. Berto's a little bit more further gone, so to speak, a little bit, you know, closer towards the end. However, they're at the same stage in a competitive welterweight division. To me, it's kind of a no-brainer fight. It's the kind of fight you make where, you know, it's almost like the old professional wrestling loser-leave-town matches, because the guy that wins is still going to have some relevancy. His name's going to carry weight. He's coming off of a couple good performances. He'll be able to get a fight. The guy who loses, for him, it's going to be a lot tougher to come back because, number one, you lost to a guy in Andre Berto or Devin Alexander who's at a certain level at this point. Neither, you know, one of these guys are considered the, you know, top of the heap of the welterweight division. Not to mention that both guys have had some successes in their careers. They're towards the tail end of their careers. So a loss to either, it significantly hurts the other one's value to me, which makes it a very interesting fight, and I think it's a very appropriate fight for both fighters at this time as well.
Yeah, that could be worse fights to be made for less money for each of them, to be honest.
And usually that's what you see. Usually what you see is these guys taking on, you know, specifically with the under the PBC banner, you know, these guys could go ahead and fight, you know, no disrespect to Adrian Granados, but it's Adrian Granados, a tough-nosed veteran that they're expected to beat. But they're fighting each other. And by fighting each other, it instantly puts them at risk to be removed from bigger paydays. So I think it's a good matchup. I think it's the kind of fight that's supposed to happen at this stage in their career.
Yeah.
Another fight that that's on the offing that's going to be on Fox is Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen and Jay Leon Love. They're set for a 10-rounder first week of September.
Yeah, that's on the undercard of Berto Alexander, am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? And it's funny because that whole card has that same feel. You know what I mean? Guys who have seen better days but still have relevancy just with their names. And, you know, they're fighting someone who is at the same stage of the career that they're at. And, again, same thing with Kid Chocolate, Jay Leon Love. The winner will go on to more paydays, and the loser will be kind of be relegated to trying to rebuild at the tail end of his career. Don't favor Jay Leon Love. Peter Quillen hasn't been active, but I've never been impressed with Jay Leon Love. Maybe Jay Leon Love maybe has a slight size advantage because he's been at 168 a little bit longer, but neither one of those guys have particularly impressed me, more so with Peter Quillen because of his inactivity. But nonetheless, I think, it's the kind of fight that should be made. Jay Leon Love was, you know, out of the, you know, four fighters we've been talking about, Jay Leon Love is probably the one who is a little bit further out of contention. So this is more of an opportunity for him, in my opinion. So.
And it's a good opportunity for him because he's fighting Peter Quillen moving up, an inactive Peter Quillen moving up.
Peter Quillen's what I like. Had one fight at 168.
And that wasn't Jay Leon Love quality. What I like is Jay Leon Love. This is a real good opportunity for him, but I mean, he really doesn't lose if he loses to Quillen. At this stage, he doesn't lose a lot if he loses to Quillen, just because Quillen's a name. Quillen's a name, and active as he was, people thought Quillen at one time was the second baddest man outside of Golovkin in the middleweight. So, you know, he's still a name. With that said, I agree with everything Ty said. I guess as far as skill-wise in the ring, it kind of matches up like Alexander Berto to me to a certain extent, to where I wouldn't be surprised if I anticipate Jay Leon Love winning, but I wouldn't be surprised if Quillen, you know, pulled it out, you know, however it went down.
And I'm going to say, well, I favor Quillen, actually. I favor Kid Chocolate, but I wouldn't be surprised if Jay Leon Love pulled it out. So, I mean, it's just the kind of fight it is, specifically at this stage. Again, I haven't seen Jay Leon Love in a while. Peter Quillen's been inactive. So there's so many variables with these four fighters going into this fight that could determine the outcome. But it's an evenly matched card on paper. It really is.
Yes.
Specifically at where they're at this stage of their career. So I think it's a product of good matchmaking. I really do. Excuse me.
Yeah, and the nice thing is we're going to be able to see it because it's going to be on Fox 1, FS1. So it's not going to cost any money to watch it. But you know, this leading up to this big Triple G Canelo fight is just, it's amazing to watch every single day. There's some kind of shop talk and or smack talk. Now we've got Abe Sanchez, who, of course, is Triple G's trainer, coming out claiming that before Canelo gets in the ring, he better find some courage. I'm getting to a point where, you know, I can see the marketing value, but I'm sort of getting tired of listening about it. Or how about yourself?
Yeah, I haven't been paying it much mind. I've seen the articles. First thing you have to understand about Abel Sanchez, Abel Sanchez is kind of like Freddie Roach was in Pacquiao's prime, where the fighter doesn't talk, but the trainer does all the talking and squawking for the fighter. So I never put much faith or much thought into the one talking if they're not actually getting in the ring. Okay?
Right.
That's number one. Number two, that fight isn't until September. Before then, we still have, you know, Pacquiao against Matisse. The fight I'm most looking forward to in the summer months, and obviously boxing is an all-year sport, but it's typically slow in the summer, but the fight I'm most looking forward to is Usyk against Gassiev. That fight is an absolute phenomenal finale for the WBSS Cruiserweight match. So before I'm allowing myself to kind of get caught up in what Abel Sanchez has to say about his fighter versus the other fighter, and obviously he's going to be biased towards his fighter, I'm not concerned about that at this time because that match isn't until September. And I've seen that match before. Usyk against Gassiev is a completely fresh match that's 50-50 on paper. Abel Sanchez needs to be talking trash. You know, when asked, Abel Sanchez, who trains Murat Gassiev, when he was asked about that fight, he said, you know, he said, my guy's a bigger puncher. He goes, but it's a 50-50 fight on paper. I lean towards, you know, my guy being a bigger puncher, but it's a 50-50 fight on paper. He didn't have that same bravado with the Canelo fight. Could it be because he doesn't have the same confidence in his fighter? I doubt that seriously. It could be because there are less cameras rolling when they talk about Murat Gassiev as opposed to Gennady Golovkin at this point. It's simple as that. He's a showman who's just trying to sell the fight, just like a lot, just like Freddie Roach used to, and trying to get in Canelo's skin, you know, his strategy. But again, the summer months have a couple fights that, to me, are right in front of us. You know, July, we still got Regis program. So we still got a bunch of fights coming up where I'm not really getting concerned with trash talk for a fight that's still 2-3 months away.
I tend to worry about the fights the closer they get. As far as the triple, so with, like, Oscar, he, you have Oscar talking, you have Abel talking. I mean, and... You know, people always try to, you know, sell a rematch, you know, just because you hear maybe some, you know, oh, the fight wasn't that good. You're going to always hear some detractors from the first fight. So, at, you know, people, you know, to a certain extent, they're going to try to sell this rematch, definitely, especially when you have controversy around. When you have controversy around it to the level of where Canelo is, and even Golovkin, I mean, is saying stuff. Not Abel, Golovkin is saying something about, you know, the whole situation.
Right.
Now, you know, you're going to have people saying, oh, well, you know, I want to see these guys knock their heads off. But then you're going to have a lot of people like, well, oh, this guy's tainted. I don't want to even, you know, really pay for anything to where this guy might be tainted. So, you know what I mean? And these people can hear all the news of, well, Canelo signed to this and he's doing this and, you know, random this and this and that. But at the end of the day, they're going to still feel the way they feel. And that is the track. I see more promotion with these guys talking than anything. It's all about trying to get the money. You know, Oscar's going to say, you know, oh, this and this. And Canelo said he wants to kill Golovkin. Golovkin, you know, they're going to, you know, it's a lot more of that. It seems now than it was in the first one. And it just, to me, I mean, some of it may be genuine on both of their parts, but more than anything, and as Ty alluded to, is more the people not in the ring talking. And when it comes down to, when that's the case, it's usually just the sell. It's usually strictly money business.
Yeah, you have the extremely competitive and controversial nature of the first fight, right? And then you have the subsequent rematch being pulled because the star actually failed a drug test. You know what I mean? So you have all this drama, all this bad blood, and what they're doing is the public is literally, you know, jumping at it, you know, hanging on to every word, and they're just feeding the public, man. They're just feeding the public because that's how they feed their kids. So they're just feeding the public. So anytime a question is asked, they're going to say something that's going to go ahead and hype their fight or sell the fight. But the fact of the matter is that if you notice, there's not a lot of promotion behind the fight like there was last time. They're spending less on marketing this time around.
Yeah.
They're just doing interviews and talking because the bad blood's out there. The public is already attached to it. Now they're just feeding the public sound bites. That's all they need to do. They're not spending as much on marketing and promotion. Yeah, they have already said that this fight does not need the promotion the last fight did. Oscar said that from the beginning, this fight does not need the promotion. Thus, there's no 24/7. There's no face-to-face off. They're not spending there was no tour. Remember they had the 3-4 city tour? They didn't do that this time because they don't need to. All they need to do is show up and do their jobs, and when the cameras roll and someone asks them a question, they just feed the public the sound bites and cliches that the public wants to hear. And we're hooked. We want to see the fight. Here we are. The fight is not till September, but we're talking about trash talk that Abel Sanchez is talking about. That's the purpose. Mm-hmm. Again, they're feeding the public because that's how they're feeding their kids. No promoting, no big giant golden boy promoting arm. Of course, they have their promotions arm, but not like the last fight. All they have to do is show up and do interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A few minutes ago, you mentioned the Matisse and Pacquiao fight. That's coming up next week. And that in itself has been on again, off again, purse problems, this problem. Do you think that's the same type of marketing that they're doing? It's just to market the fight without having to pay for it?
No, I don't think that fight has been well marketed at all. And
no.
I also think that the problems that were surrounding the fight were legitimate problems. Much of it was put out by Bob Arum, primarily because his experience in dealing with Pacquiao's Malaysian or Dubai connections have never proved to be profitable or fruitful. Thus, as you know, Matisse was slow to get his check because he didn't get paid the money that was supposed to go into an account for his purse. It wasn't there when it was supposed to be there. So Bob Arum took that and said, hey, you know what, these guys have never been credible with putting this overseas fight together, so I don't think it's going to happen. I think reporters kind of took what Bob Arum was saying, along with the legitimate monetary issues, and kind of ran with it. But Matisse has received his check, or the check is in escrow for Matisse, so the fight is coming off. Saw some clips of Pacquiao. I tell you, he didn't look great. There was just clips of him working with Boo Boy, who's training him now. And, the first thing I noticed, to me, is he looks like an older guy. And I say that physically. He doesn't quite have the same muscle definition or mass that he had. I remember when Bernard Hopkins came to the ring in his last fight to fight Joe Smith. The first thing I remember is looking at my brother being like, his body looks crazy. And what it was that he was still training, but his body was responding different because he's older. The only way he was going to maintain the muscle mass he did was if he started weight training, strength training. But he wasn't. He's doing his typical boxing training, but he lost his muscle mass because he's just older. With Pacquiao, you know, obviously there have been all sorts of rumors and stuff, but what I see is, to me, a guy whose body just doesn't necessarily respond to training the way it used to. You used to see Pacquiao out a couple weeks before the fight, and he looked dense and ripped. Still looks in good shape, but he just doesn't look ripped like he used to, not as dense as he used to. Again, he was just working with Boo Boy. It was an open workout. I've never put much faith into open workouts because I understand that someone's working out for a camera. They're working out for press. Nonetheless, I was a little taken aback by how quick he did not look. I don't want to say how slow he looked, how quick he did not look. He just didn't look as quick and as reactive. It led to comments of him looking disinterested. I don't know about that. What I just saw, I didn't see in that moment the frenetic fireball at all, or even a shell of that guy. I saw an older guy who was hitting the mitts. That's kind of what I saw, an older, in-shape guy who was hitting the mitts who still had a little bit of athleticism. Matisse is pretty far gone himself. But I tell you, just what I saw, It made me want to say, you know what, let me go back and look at this Matisse fight, his last fight, because, I mean, Pacquiao looks primed and ripe to get caught with something. But, again, he wasn't putting forth all effort. So you can't really read too much into that. And styles make fights. You get two guys in the ring, different things happen. Sense of urgency,
sure.
Stress, all that becomes part of the battle. But
sure.
With that said, just seeing clips of Pacquiao before a fight, years past, and seeing clips of him today, it's not the same guy. It's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See?
Yeah. When fighters get older, they don't, I mean, they either change or they don't, and meaning that they either kind of not change but adapt their style to their age and to their limitations and their knowledge, their gained knowledge, or
mm-hmm.
they fade fast. They fade
mm-hmm.
extremely fast. Pacquiao, and after seeing the Horn fight with Pacquiao, and they made this fight,
mm-hmm.
I just thought to myself, the last Matisse, the last time I saw Matisse in the ring, he was a better boxer than him. He's
yeah.
a better boxer, more experienced. He's a better fighter
yeah.
in the ring than Horn, to me. And right off the bat, I didn't even think about size. You know, Horn's a bigger guy. I didn't think about that. I just thought, wow, Matisse is a better boxer than Horn. Maybe
mm-hmm.
not even as quick, but he's a better boxer,
he's
as far
skilled. Yeah,
even in the game of boxing, he's a better boxer
yeah,
than Horn.
So, agreed.
So, I mean, right then and there, and for most of the fight when Horn fought Pacquiao, a lot of people thought, you know, Pacquiao won. I didn't see that. I saw for most of the fight, Horn did a lot of good boxing. A lot of smart boxing, a lot of mix it up boxing. Matisse is not exactly like that. But one thing I do know about Matisse, he will adapt. He will change a game plan up. Matisse previously fighting all like Matisse he had through his whole career until he saw Ruslan Prevetnikov. All of a sudden, Matisse's on his slow back foot with the jab, you know, throwing his power from distance and range. You know, he's employing a game plan. And he successfully employed that to beat Prevetnikov. So, you know, Matisse, he's a guy who can adapt, who can go into a camp and say, I'm willing to change. I'm willing to go ahead and alter what I have to do to win.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say Pacquiao. I can't say that he will be able to do that. I'm not saying he won't, but I don't see it. Meaning that
mm-hmm.
Pacquiao was dominant the way Pacquiao used to fight. And I say used
mm-hmm.
to fight because that's not there anymore. That is just not there anymore. So, I mean, and when you're dominant, so dominant with that and running the streaks, I mean, the guy's
mm-hmm.
running the streak against top quality fighters, then you have no
right.
semblance of changing. You know, so Matisse also had that too, but not to that level. So,
mm-hmm.
and Matisse, he has less physical abilities than Pacquiao. He has to implore more of a mental game, to be honest. Pacquiao, I mean, he's quick enough. He'll see it coming and move. He can go ahead and ramble off, you know, this and move to the side. Throw a left uppercut, you know, and hurry up and move on. So, I mean, it's different fighters, but one really can't afford to age any more than they have, than the other. Like, I mean, Matisse can afford to age a little more. To be honest, Pacquiao cannot. I don't think in this fight he cannot.
You know what, Butch? Zito kind of hopped around a point, but he didn't make it. A specific point that he's kind of brought to light in my mind. It was a point he didn't make, but he kind of hopped around, and I think he actually feels this way. But the fact of the matter is and when you know Zito was assessing the boxing skills of Matisse compared to Jeff Horn. At this stage, Horn's a bigger, more aggressive, more active, more reactive fighter than Matisse. But Matisse's a better skilled boxer, period. Just simple as that. Not saying who wins. One is younger, fresher, more reactive. The other's just a better skilled boxer. Just, you know, just as far as the fundamentals of the trade, he applies the trade better. Fact of the matter is, Matisse's a better boxer, boxer, mm-hmm. just pure boxer than Pacquiao is. Pacquiao, mm-hmm. kind of like a Roy Jones, is tremendously mm-hmm. was tremendously athletic and gifted, right? Matisse, mm-hmm. kind of like Bernard Hopkins. Again, not comparing, but to mm-hmm. say, kind of like Bernard Hopkins. Doesn't have that whirlwind of activity. You know, it's not the fastest guy. But what he does is, you know, he places punches well. He's always been a pretty accurate puncher. And he gets his hands back. He's defensively responsible. He makes the most out of what he has. The one thing he has in abundance is bar jarring power. When I'm watching Pacquiao today and I'm seeing him get smacked in the, you know, hit in the mitt in the face with the mitt by Boo Boy, and I'm like, man, he's just not as reactive as he used to be. And I saw that.
Right.
I saw that with Jeff Horn, right? I saw that with Jeff
yeah.
Horn.
But
right. remember, a year before the Jeff Horn fight, Pacquiao dominated Jesse Vargas. That Pacquiao mm-hmm. would have done the same thing to Jeff Horn. So mm-hmm. when we talk about fading fast, that was a year, you know, that was a year before the Jeff Horn fight. Now another year later since he's fought. So how much is mm-hmm. he going to have left? He didn't look reactive in just the cliffs. The thing is, though, he's not fighting Keith Thurman. He's not fighting Errol Spence. He's not even fighting Jeff Horn as far as a young, reactive guy. He's fighting another guy whose reaction, like Matisse's reaction time, looked kind of bad the last time I saw him fight. That's why I thought he looked faded, because his reaction mm-hmm. time looked bad. His feet kind of dragged. Mm-hmm. That also could be attributed to the fact that he had a long layoff. But with that said, Pacquiao no longer the physical, athletic dynamo he was. If it comes down to just a pure fundamental boxing match, Matisse is a cleaner, more polished boxer than Pacquiao. Pacquiao is one of those guys like Ali, gets away with a lot of mistakes. As you get older, you don't get away with as many mistakes. You rely on certain things. Pacquiao still relies on wonderful conditioning and durability. He's tough. He's tough, and he's still a little quicker than everyone else. But this fight is more interesting to a certain extent. It really kind of, to me, I know what Pacquiao is going to look like. It really comes down to me to what Matisse has left. Believe it or not, even though this is the Pacquiao thing, it comes down to what Matisse has left. Because if Matisse has something left, he's going to go ahead and pull the upset. Because if Boo Boy can go ahead and touch Pacquiao in the face with the mitt, then I know Matisse can catch him.
Well, and Matisse is fresher. Rugged style Matisse, implies and has been doing throughout his whole career. How many wars exactly has Matisse been in? He's been a few, but he's not a guy who goes to war. Pacquiao has a lot
of
wars.
The Dan Garcia fight is the only fight I could think where he really took kind of a sustained punishment, give and take punishment. The post-out fight, he was going well, got frustrated, and got caught. But the only time I really remember him going to real war was kind of the Danny Garcia fight, Zita.
Yeah, and that was, him running into a lot of jabs and getting his eyes swollen kind of war. Pacquiao, he's notorious when he was coming up, before he was made it to that lightweight, when he was in the lower weights, the Moraleses, the fights with him. Then he went to fight Marquez. Then, he had his stretches, but then after the Marquez fight, his last fight, Jeff Horn, what does he have left after that fight? That physically durable, draining war that he just went through with Jeff Horn. That could have knocked a bit of age off of him. Added some age on him, put some right on him. So, styles truly make a fight, and not only that, styles going into the fight. What has your style been? Have you been going through, this? Pacquiao is a tough guy, but you can only be tough for so long. You don't want to, when you need to rely on other things, you need to adapt. And that's the only thing, Pacquiao, and I still basically kind of lean toward him to win. But his inability to adapt, I think, and I just have never seen it, in his career. And so I just think if any of his skill is, any of his physical skills have diminished anymore, it's going to go bad. I think that Matisse, he could diminish a little bit more, and he'll still be good if Pacquiao diminishes a teeny bit more.
But you're like me, you're leaning towards Pacquiao because Pacquiao's historically a great fighter. Matisse's historically a good fighter. And Matisse's passed it. It really is that simple. These guys are fighting. That's kind of why they're fighting each other, because they cannot. They're not at a point right, you know, at this stage in their careers where they're going to. Matisse is not going to be competitive with the elite young welterweights. Not at this stage in his career. Not at welterweight. Pacquiao at this stage in his career, he no longer is competitive with elite young welterweights. That Jesse Vargas was the last time you'll see that guy show up. So at this stage in their career, they're fighting the guys that they stand the best chance to win at and make some good money doing it.
Well, you know, do you think this is the swan song for Manny? I mean, he's in politics. He's getting to an age where he really should be thinking about stepping out of the ring rather than taking a beating or giving a good beating and tearing himself up. Do you think that he may be close to retirement from the ring?
I think he's obviously close. Yeah, I think he's obviously close. But at the same time, he you know, for the past, 3 years, he's fighting once a year. So, you know, I think adopting the Adonis Stevenson, the Gary Russell approach to boxing, where you're fighting once a year, you're doing all your business stuff, you know, on the outside, for him it's just a good extra way to make money, and he loves competing. And, you know, and at this point, you know, he hasn't been taking any damage, you know, since the Marquez fight. The Jeff Horn fight was physically grueling and, you know, it was taxing, and I'm sure it was damaging, but it wasn't that kind of concussive, you know, career-ending, life-altering damage. He just got, you know, kind of roughed up in that fight. So I think for him, you know, at this point in his career, once a year playing his lane, like fighting Lucas Matisse, that's staying in the lane he should be in right now. I think when you start talking about fighting, you know, kind of like Hector Camacho. Hector Camacho fought forever, right? And he fought at a certain level. Then every now and then, because he was winning at that level, he'd get a step up. He'd lose, and then he'd be like, all right, you know, let me go back to what I was doing. So it's kind of like as long as Pacquiao doesn't dip his toe in to the deep end of the pool, at this stage of his career, he'll be okay. He'll be okay until he's not. Until he's not, and he won't know that until it happens in a ring. So.
I think a bad Matisse loss and Pacquiao, he's going to retire. But I mean, anywhere along the line, Pacquiao retires, I see him coming back just to make money. As long as he has a name, I can see him coming back well beyond his years. You know, just to come back to make, you know, a couple dollars. Just put his
but
name
make
out
no
there.
Mistake,
make
it's going to take that bad loss to sit him down now. Like, I don't think he will sit down until he takes that bad loss. I think he'll get back up, like Zito said, come back, maybe have a couple fights. But I don't think we hear that retirement word until somebody, you know, puts something on him. I really don't.
Mm-hmm. You know, another guy who's making a name for himself in politics all of a sudden, outside the ring, is that was his name.
Orlando Salido.
Orlando Salido. Yeah, he was elected.
Orlando Salido.
Yeah, I don't know what a state deputy is in Mexico. I would imagine it must be like a senator is in where Pacquiao is from.
Hey, Butch, I have four words for you. Four words for you. State deputy in Mexico.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it is. He's a state deputy in Mexico. In Mexico. He is a government official in Mexico.
Yeah.
Talk about cojones. Because in Mexico, you know what's going on, and you know they target government officials just like their rival gang members. I just read an article literally a couple weeks ago because, you know, a Mexican boxer was just executed literally a few months
right.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an article just about all the different Mexican boxers who have been killed over the last 2 years. And in that article, they just happened to mention politicians that have been killed too. So, you know, four words, state deputy in Mexico. In Mexico. So, you know, I mean, we always knew that, you know, Salido, Surrey, you know, is a courageous fighter, but obviously he's a courageous person. And, you know, and kudos to him. Obviously, he believes he can do some good for Mexico. And, you know, unlike the United States, in Mexico, when you're a public servant, your life is really on the line. So I wish him the best.
Sure.
I'm going to actually put it in a halfway perspective. There are two sides to everything. And you're absolutely right with the one potential side. The other potential side is I just hope Salido is not on the other side of that, meaning
mm-hmm.
on the corruption side. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm a realist. I bring everything to light. And that is a problem in Mexico, too, to where if they're not killing the officials, they're killing them off, and then whoever's replacing them are the corruption people.
Right.
So you're going to have, you know what I mean? So, and that's, as I say, that's a massive problem there also. So
mm-hmm.
I just hope Salido is on the courageous side.
Yeah.
The more courageous side.
Yeah, another guy we hadn't heard from in a while is Netito Dener. Now I understand that he's going to be the showcase for the World Boxing Super Series that's going to start up again
mm-hmm.
In September with an eye to win the Muhammad Ali Trophy. What do you think of that? Let me ask you, what do you think about that whole series of fights?
I love the WBSS. You heard me referencing earlier the Cruiserweight tournament in which Alexander Usyk, Ivety Fil versus Murat Gassiev for the Muhammad Ali tournament and the undisputed Cruiserweight champion. So we wouldn't have an undisputed Cruiserweight champion if not for the World Boxing Super Series. Obviously, they've had some difficulties in the middleweight, super middleweight tournament, but the final has been made with George Groves and Callum Smith. So I think it's been a wonderful thing. The tournament that you're talking about that Nonito has decided to enter, that one there, that at 118, was Olani Tete and Master Inoue? Wow. I mean, that is the one thing about these tournaments, if you notice, they've been taking place mostly overseas. Why? Because overseas they can get the guys to fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
In America, with the different promotion affiliations, you can't get the top guys to always fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
But overseas, where you don't have the, you know, the different promotional cold wars, you can get the top four or five, six guys to be in a tournament. And that's what they've been doing consistently. As far as Nonito Donaire fighting in the WBSS tournament, I think it's a horrible move. I think it's a
mm-hmm.
it's a bad, bad, bad move.
Mm-hmm.
The number one reason why is Nonito is now 35 years old. He has not fought at 118 in approximately 10 years. He was
mm-hmm.
too small for 126. We saw that when he was axed by Nicholas the Axeman Walters. At
mm-hmm.
122, even though he gave Carl Frampton a somewhat competitive fight, we see where his ceiling is right now. He's just, you know, again, he's a guy who we know has been clean his whole career because he was the first guy to take year-round VADA testing. So we know he's been clean. And
mm-hmm.
at 35, at that size, you usually start to diminish if you're not on illegal drugs, which he is not. So all
mm-hmm.
of a sudden, go from 126, where he fought Carl Frampton. Remember, his last fight was at 126. Now he's gone all the way down to 118, where he hadn't fought in 10 years, to fight
right.
guys that are in their mid-20s. I think Zolani Tete is the oldest, until Nonito Donaire, he was the oldest one in the tournament at 29. These guys are killers. And we talk about, you know, how these young guys sometimes aren't better boxers, but they're just more reactive, more fresh, more, you know, everything. Bad move for Nonito Donaire. I don't think it's going to end well for him. He thinks his size will give him an advantage. I think his size, to a certain extent, will, because he's a tough guy too, will allow him to absorb blows, but I think that leads for a prolonged punishment. I expect Nonito Donaire, and I love him, have all the respect in the world for him and everything he's accomplished, but I expect him at some point in that tournament to take a bad beating. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hold on. Now, Nonito is coming from 132 to fight at 118, right?
Yes.
No. 126.
126.
He fought Frampton last at 126. He hasn't fought at 118 in 10 years.
All right. Name me a guy who's ever been over 33 to move back down and to win against three top level guys.
Doesn't happen.
That's the thing. Once you reach a certain age, and you've moved up in weight, to come back down and then to refight those guys again, you're going to a new world. That's going to be a new world to you. Just because it's not there anymore. You're going to say, oh yeah, I saw that before, way before. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You're going to think you didn't. Oh, this guy's the fastest guy I ever saw. He may not been, but just because you've gotten so used to going up and fighting these other guys, you know, heavier guys, get a little slower, that when you move back down, you're not going to see most of the stuff coming at you. And then you're going to mess around. Then when you're going down, it's not like you're going down as a heavier guy. You're going down almost 10 pounds to a 118. So now you're not, I mean, how much can you rehydrate? How big can you
and
get
that's my point
before
right
you
there.
Get in the red? You're going to be, you're going to be.
It's not even about, it's not even about the competition. I mean, yes, you're fighting good competition, but it's not about how fast they are. It's literally the fact that at 35 years old, your body does not do what it did at 25. And you cannot, you've been fighting at 122, 126 for the past 10 years. And your last fight was at 126. All of a sudden, for you at 35 to try to get back down to 118, it never goes well. First of all, you're going to look emaciated at the weigh-in. You're going to look absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't care what you rehydrate to. I do not care what you rehydrate to. Your body does not recover from that.
Nope.
It didn't work for Roy Jones. It didn't work for Eddie Chambers. It didn't work for Chad Dawson. I could go on and on and on.
Anybody.
It doesn't work. It's older, because it's just too, it has too much of a drastic effect on your body in the competition. The fact that you're fighting world-class opponents, you're a world-class guy at 118, yes. You drop down to 118, you're still a good fighter because you've been one of the greats for your era. However, your body does not react that way. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work well for anybody. Chris Spurr tried to go down the cruiserweight, remember? It doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, it'd be great if it did, but as you get older, your metabolism slows down. Not only that, you start to lose muscle a little bit more rapidly. Your body doesn't recover as quickly. So all of a sudden, you're going to 118. Your body's not even recovering the way it recovered when you used to cut to 118 10 years ago when you were 25. Like, it's just scientifically, it's a horrible idea. And it's never, like Zito said, name one fighter who's done that and gone down and beaten three class fighters. I can't name one fighter who's done it and been successful at all. Not even talking about world class fighters. Not successful at all. It always ends bad. The killers that Nonito is going to be fighting, again, being bigger, maybe he can absorb blows a little better, but leads me to believe he is going to eventually, we're going to watch him taking a career-ending beating. That's the only outcome I see that. He's going to get beat up. Even if he gets by somebody, somebody's going to hurt him.
When you move down, your reactions don't get faster. You get older, the reactions get slower. When you move down in weight, they don't all of a sudden increase. Your reactions are just they're appropriate. They're age appropriate. Reactions are age appropriate, not size appropriate. Hand speed can be a size appropriate, but if you can't really react, where are your hands going to go?
Like I understand the move as a business opportunity, and I understand the thought process behind it. Nonito, outside of Nicholas Walters, who was just really too big for him, hasn't been blown out. You know what I mean? He's done pretty well against guys his size. And he just was competitive against Carl Frampton at 126.
Yeah.
So in his mind, he's been fighting bigger guys. He could go down and handle little guys. Maybe if he didn't have to lose weight, maybe if he could show up at 126 and they fought at 118, but that's not the case. He has to weigh in at 118. And the effects have always historically been adverse on the athlete. The boxer, the MMA fighter, whenever they try to go down in weight late in their career, your body just doesn't kind of work that way.
I remember how heavy Nonito was when he fought Frampton. He looked almost a weight class better than Frampton when he rehydrated. Okay.
But, yeah, the other one I wanted to ask you before we have to close here is Dylan White claims the ref helped Parker in his last fight by stepping in all night. Did you guys see that fight? And if you did, what's your thoughts on it?
You know what? I saw the fight, but I also read that comment this week that that Dylan White made, and it's much ado about nothing. He's just selling his fight with Joseph Parker. In my opinion, if anything, the referee allowed Joshua, was more favorable to Joshua by not allowing much infighting.
Right.
Don't think he did anything to save Parker. Nobody was really in trouble because no one landed significantly flush blows like that. So it just wasn't the kind of fight where someone had to be saved of being knocked out. If anything, the crowd had to be saved of boredom. The ref should have let him fight a little bit more. That's the thing, in my opinion. But you know, his comment was actually much ado about nothing. It's just him.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What do you think about Dimitri? Go ahead, Z.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, does he think that the ref's going to allow y'all to infight? Really, if that's what he thinks, then he's in the wrong mindset fighting. Joseph Parker's not trying to infight with Dylan White. It's simple as that. So, he's going to say, oh, the ref helped, that's not playing into it. Joseph Parker was more – Joshua is 6'7". Joseph Parker is more willing. He's going to be trying, at times to infight with Joshua. Not much more he can do except for eat his jab. You know what I mean? So when you get in, you want to be allowed to work. I think the ref sort of benefited Joshua by not letting them work enough. Don't think it would have been a big difference as far as the outcome, but I do think that the ref should have done work a little more. With that said, if that's not even going to – be a point of contention in this fight. Parker's not a big
hole.
Parker's not a big hole.
What you got to understand is the real root of that statement lies in the fact that Dylan White was knocked out by Anthony Joshua. Joseph Parker wasn't. So it's Dylan White's way of saying, well, the reason why you didn't get knocked out is because, that's all it is. Whereas he's always said, he legitimately had a very bad shoulder going into the fight with Anthony Joshua, and he's always credited that as the reason why he eventually got knocked out. So he's trying to credit Parker not being knocked out to the official. Okay, I got knocked out because it is the only reason you didn't get knocked out. That's where that statement comes from. It's just a fighter bravado arrogance thing. That's all it is.
And our last entry here is, by the way, we had put on our face sheet that we were going to be talking about Joe Frazier, Joe Walcott, Joey Giardello, because Chris had asked about that. We have a bunch of background for him, but Dr. Chris wasn't able to make it tonight. He is at a function with his wife, so everything they're going through, we didn't want to bother him again. So we will have that next week. We'll review Jersey Joe. My God, it was a 51-18-2, and Rocky Marciano, 43-0. And Archie Moore, 186-23-10. And
more knockouts than anyone in history.
But the last one I want to ask you about was Demetrius Andrade is likely the next match for Billy Joe Saunders as a mandatory. What's your thoughts on that?
Joe, if you're asking me, first of all, I will believe it when I see it. With those two active pulling out of fights, not signing for fights, dying. First thing you have to recognize is Demetrius Andrade just stepped away from his longtime promoter at Star Boxing, Joe DiGuardia. It was amicable. Nonetheless, he just stepped away from those guys. He's just been woefully inactive. He hasn't fought since he made his middleweight debut against Altonez Fox. I personally don't know, and I did read that he was put into a mandatory position. I don't know how he could be put into a mandatory position when he's only had one fight at middleweight against Altonez Fox. As far as Billy Joe Saunders is concerned, Billy Joe Saunders strung Murray around something bad because he thought he had a chance to get – actually, because he had a chance to get the Golovkin fight before the Canelo fight was signed. So with those two guys, when it comes to – I mean, you can't deny their skills. They're both tremendously skilled fighters. But when it comes to actually getting in the ring, what you read, it doesn't even matter. Until it's actually signed and you see these guys walking to the ring – you can't necessarily buy it just because both of them have somehow circumvented fights before, whether it's been their promoters, whether it's been their management. But for whatever reason, neither guy's in the ring as consistently or as actively as they should be. So,
I've seen Billy Joe Saunders fight competition, fight people. I haven't really seen Andre fight. And, I mean, just the inactivity alone just lets me kind of, you know, leads me to believe that they're not going to sign. I mean, outside of style, just because, I mean, just to match those two up, I wouldn't see Billy Joe's camp in a hurry to match up with Andrade. You know, just to be honest, he's not really any money, you know, comparatively to some of the other middleweights. And, I mean... He, as inactive as the guy is and everything, he is a just difficult style to look good against.
Absolutely. So why
I don't even see, like, as far as just, you know, going for that money, you know, when there's, you know, more money, easier places, I don't even see them really thinking about signing that.
Okay. Well,
that fight only happens if it goes to first base. That's the only way that fight happens. If it goes to first spin, it's mandated. And that's only because I don't think Billy Joe Saunders wants to be stripped. Because, you know, with all the belts being with Golovkin or Canelo, he holds major bargaining power holding on to that one belt. That's the only way that fight happens. But even if that were the case, there's a big part of me that thinks somehow Demetrius Andre wouldn't take that fight. I know Billy Joe Saunders wouldn't look to take that fight. Just like Zito said, it's a difficult style matchup. But also, it's just, you know, there's no money. There's nothing to gain for Billy Joe Saunders with that fight. So I just don't think either guy would rush to take that fight. Billy Andrade would have more motivation because that belt is valuable because it's the one out there.
Hey, well, we're just up against our time limit here, and I want to thank both of you guys for coming on again tonight. It was really good to see you the other day. And,
yes, it was good seeing you guys.
Zee, it's always good talking to you every week. I know our listeners learn an awful lot, and we just got our new ratings in, and we bumped up to 266.5 each and every week. So I got to say 99% of that comes from you guys and your help with the show, and we really appreciate it since stepping in since Bobby's demise. But and we look forward to many, many more years. So we just passed our 15th year on the air, and we're looking for another 15. So, Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, you know, it's been a great show. Always love talking to you guys, Butch, Zito. Just want to say hi to our Fighting Words family, Brady, as well as Dr. Chris. Look forward to talking to you all next week. Bob is our co-pilot.
See?
Another wonderful show. I definitely want to thank my Fighting Words family, my Carol family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob and Coach Mel. If anybody wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call. Butch.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation for the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men of Peace and Fire Services. But we'd also ask you to keep a good thought for Coach Mel and for Bob. He was a terrific coach, terrific friend, and Bob was a terrific son as well as a coach. He is in the Arena Football Hall of Fame, and we both coached in Venice. But we thank everybody for listening. These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just acknowledge them. A handshake, a wink, anything to let them know that you know they're there. These programs are also dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Bager, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anofa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogel, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Boward, Kissimmee Police Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy William Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise out to meet you. May the rains be fall softly on your fields. May the sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night. God bless.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ahezah yelama, son ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yelama.
County Dispatch, the 1999. County Dispatch, the 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Good night, Bob. We love you. We miss you.